samurais, these magnificent warriors of Japan, have amazed people for centuries. You can't help but be amazed by their loyalty and fearlessness. And, well, to elaborate on that, here's one such story. A story about a true samurai. So, in 1933, Yoshiteru Murakami and his lord, Prince Morinaga, were trapped by enemies in a thatched roof house. Murakami created a distraction by climbing up to the roof, which he set fire to, bellowing that he was the prince. He stripped off his armor and robe, shouting that he was going to show them how a samurai dies. He then slit his stomach with a short sword, taunting his enemies and throwing his intestines down at them. Naturally, this attracted so much attention, the prince could escape. This was one of the earliest known cases of seppuku or harakiri, also perfectly showing the fearlessness of a samurai.
Damn, I mean, that's one hell of a story.
I mean, it sure tells us a lot about samurais.
Yeah. Are you sure about the whole slitting the belly open part?
I mean, it's something that has been documented for, and it's actually called seppuku. It's like a ritual suicide, but I think I'll cover that later in the episode. But it's pretty amazing. It shows the determination and the loyalty a samurai actually has, and how they strictly stick to their code. It's just amazing, man.
But I mean, that's a really painful way to go, though.
True. It's painful.
I can't imagine doing the same.
I mean, it's not even as easy as just slitting your wrists or slitting your neck, because that wouldn't take as long to die. But like disemboweling yourself, that's like a very painful way to go. But shows how loyal they were.
Well, what if I told you they actually weren't that loyal? We'd have to go to a period called the Sengoku Jidai for that. But
okay.
Yeah, but before that, we just have to cover a few things. Basically, before Sengoku Jidai, Japan was sort of united and ruled by a line of emperors, which were later overthrown in the 12th century by a military aristocracy. These guys basically formed something called a shogunate.
Okay.
A military government, which with someone called a shogun at the head. So the shogun was basically a dictator in certain ways, but not really. Like, the emperor still was respected because as a figurehead, but the shogun basically ruled Japan.
Wait, so the emperor didn't have any authority over their citizen?
No.
I see.
The emperor actually, so it's actually pretty interesting what happened. During the from the 8th and the 12th century, so in between this period, what actually happened was nobles, aristocrats, and like this obviously included the emperor, what they did was they kind of, I would say, forgot their duties to the people of Japan. They shifted more towards art and other sources of pleasure. I'm not going to mention those. But yeah, you get the point, right? So if the ruler is not ruling, everyone basically rules themselves. And that's where these military dictators came in. Not dictators, they're actually called daimyo.
Okay.
That roughly translates to warlord in Japan.
Wait, so these daimyos or these secret rulers, so was it like kind of like one of those secret society things where you don't know they're ruling you, but they actually are? Or was it like pretty out in the open that it's not the emperor who's giving out these orders, it's actually someone at the back end?
People, No, so what actually happened was before the 12th century, because the emperor stopped ruling, these daimyo, they obviously had territories of their own, right? So they ruled those territories themselves. That's basically what happened up till the 12th century. In the year 1192, what actually happened was a bunch of them came together and overthrew the emperor, or the emperor.
But so they still let him be there as like
a figurehead.
A figurehead, a face.
Yeah, he's basically regarded as the spirit of Japan at this point in time. And he doesn't, the powers that the emperor actually had weren't restored until like 1868, which is like really recent.
So,
interesting thing, the daimyo actually are samurai.
Cool. Wait, so samurais overthrew the empire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, yes. I mean, it was born out of need, because something had to be done, right? You can't just live in multiple different
states. Weren't samurais actually built, if I may? Wasn't the need for a samurai to be there built to serve their master? How can they overthrow an empire? Who are they actually serving?
So they weren't actually serving the emperor per se. They were just like, yeah, we respect your authority and we'll just go about our territories. You just tell us what to do and we'll do it. But if you if you stop getting orders, then you have to do something, right? So that's what happened. After the 12th century, I'm talking about the 14th century. There was something called the Ashikaga Shogunate. And Japan, again, was largely unified at this point in time. But as things tend to happen, a war broke out between two major clans. The war was called the Onin War. The clans involved were the Hosokawa and the Yamana clan. So what this did was, guess what could have happened here? Two major clans fight for power. What could have happened to Japan?
I mean, wait, so two major clans of Japan, and they were well known, right, throughout Japan?
Yeah.
And they fight, well, the obvious answer, Japan splits into, well, different sides, I guess?
Correct. That's exactly what happened. So, yeah. In the
like a civil war. Wait, so a civil war?
Yes. It was the most bloody part of Japanese history. So this period was actually called Sengoku Jidai, and it lasted 1.5 centuries, which is...
A long time.
Yeah. And Japan was basically just sprawling with samurai armies everywhere. Like, entire armies of samurai. And this is no joke.
Damn. I mean, like, fuck. So, Japan split into many parts. And a literal civil war broke out between samurai. And samurais were fighting each other.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So, at this point in time, the definition of a samurai, like, changed.
Okay.
To say the least.
Hmm.
Earlier, samurai were basically warriors, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, they were.
Now, they were basically warrior aristocrats. So, they were part of clans. They ruled their territories under the shogunate, which at this point broke up, right? So, the shogunate was no more. And all of these clans are now, mind you, over 100 clans. All of these clans were basically grasping at power. They're looking at each other's territories, seeing, can I actually attack them to get more territory? And, you know, eventually, can I become the shogun? Can I rule all of Japan? And that was their end game. I mean, why wouldn't their end game
be this? This kind of goes against the Bushido code as well. Like, okay, so yeah. For the listeners, the Bushido Code was basically, it translates to, roughly translates to, way of the warrior. And it's basically the code of a samurai. And samurais were very, very fucking serious about this. So, and it was formed in somewhere around, well, the mid-19th century. But the actual concepts of it came way before that, like early 17th century. Because samurais needed to be controlled. They were like these fucking monsters and beasts of men who knew how to handle their weapons, who were fucking fearless. So you needed to control that power. Otherwise, it would just blow up in your face. So that's why the Bushido Code came into, well, perspective. Because you need that. And after the entire samurai scene declined, and like the entire samurai as a class, they ceased to exist. That's like fairly recent. Bushido as a code actually became a very significant part of Japan. Like every Japanese and some Japanese person in some way or the other actually abides by the Bushido code. And that's something that blows my mind.
Wait, even today?
Even today. And like, just quickly going over it, Bushido covers 8 things. That's justice, courage, mercy, politeness, honesty, honor, loyalty, and self-control. And when you think about it, these 8 things are like the fundamental parts of society. So like, if everyone abides by this, we'll have a very, very peaceful society.
Yeah.
And that's how it is. But again, continuing with your point.
Yeah, so I think in the 1.5 century period, Sengoku Jidai, I don't think they really followed the Bushido code, because I mean, some of the stories from this period, like, they're just completely about betrayal and trickery and war, basically. And I mean, all signs point to there existing no Bushido. So
I mean, anyways, it's the same thing, isn't it? Often the intoxication of power, and it just overcomes your code and values. Power often does that. Like, you've seen even in today's society, these politicians, they start off as wanting change, wanting to make actual change. But then power and that feeling of power is so fucking intoxicating that they end up doing whatever, you know, serves them the best.
Yeah.
It's always been there.
So personalities like this have always been there, right?
Yeah.
So let's take a look at this part of Japanese society in the 15th century. We start off, so since there were multiple clans, we start off with a clan called the Oda, O-D-A.
Oda.
And yeah, Oda. So basically, during this period, in the start, this is around 1500.
Okay.
The head of the Oda clan dies. He bites old age and, well, dies. And the entire Oda clan is obviously there for his funeral, because why not? And the thing is, there was this guy called Oda Nobunaga, who was his eldest son.
Okay.
But he was hated by his own clan, which was a very bad thing, because, I mean, in Japan, all you had was your clan. And you basically couldn't trust other clans.
Wait, why was he hated by his own clan?
Oh, yeah. You remember you said people that basically kind of have no honor because lust takes over, lust and greed takes over.
Yeah.
This guy was basically that. And he had an insatiable lust for power.
Damn.
And he wanted to be shogun, and he was ambitious as hell.
Wait, so people hated him because of his ambitions and want for power?
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
So, Oda Nobunaga takes control of the Oda clan.
Hmm.
And while they're attending the funeral at one of the Oda castles, another clan called the Imigawa, basically with 10 times the troops, head on and march into Oda territory. Because obviously, everyone's looking for more territory in this time.
Wait, so was it planned or was it coincidental?
No, it was planned, of course. When the head of clan dies, the clan is pretty much very vulnerable.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you take your chance?
It's a cheap shot, man. It completely goes against honor.
So, the thing is, since they have a complete numerical advantage and superiority, what they do is they push all into Oda territory up till where in the entire Oda clan was. Because, again, funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Oda territory is pretty hilly. I mean, all of Japan is pretty hilly. Most of Japan is pretty hilly.
Most of Japan.
So, the Imigawa are actually, resting and celebrating their recent victory, per se, over the Odas.
Okay.
And they're camping on the hilltop, right, overlooking the Oda castle. And their friends, the Matsudaira clan, who was basically a minor clan at this point in time, were also like, oh yeah, Imigawas are strong and it's a good move to, stay on their good side or, become allies with them because they seem to be strong. So they basically led the charge into Oda territory. Now, where the ambitious part comes in, Oda Nobunaga, with just over 2,000 men, because again, it's his territory and he knows his territory very well.
Oh.
It's night, it's raining, it's foggy. They head up in one of the most ambitious military advances ever, I would say. This guy heads up the hill, and again, the soldiers are drunk, they're celebrating, they're fighting, they're doing all sorts of stuff, they're resting.
Okay.
He basically launches an assault with a 1 to 10, they're 1 to 10 outnumbered. And they basically kill everyone.
Wait, so you're telling me that 2,000 people murdered 20,000 people?
Yeah, over 25,000 people.
Over 25,000 people. That's fucking badass, man. That's fucking badass.
No. So one of the funniest things is, the head of the Matsudaira clan, he was also resting, he was drinking, he was watching a play. That was the only entertainment, I guess. He thought that when actually the guys were fighting, he thought that his men actually broke out into like a fist fight or something.
Okay.
And because like they were drunk and all.
Mm-hmm.
What he didn't know was, they were being attacked by the Oda.
And God damn it.
He calls out to his people like, please stay quiet. I'm trying to watch the play. And a person just comes in from the from his back and stabs him with a spear.
Wait. So you're telling me, you're telling me that this motherfucker is watching a play and is completely oblivious to the fact that his men are being butchered by this overly ambitious idiot's men.
Yeah.
When they were outnumbered 1 to 10.
Yes. So then they didn't kill everyone because they didn't have to kill everyone. They obviously, you just cut the head of the snake and the rest follow.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically, they just killed the head and the others retreated. Ones who didn't die retreated. Obviously, Oda Nobunaga pursued because why would you let them go?
Exactly.
So that was basically the end of the Imigawa clan. And
one of the glorious way to die.
Major victories to Oda, Nobunaga.
Wait, so, did anyone actually ever expect this Oda Nobunaga? To ever like do something of this sort? Because this was genius.
Yeah, he was, so he was like this hothead kind of person, but I mean, this is, because I mean, it makes sense. Like when you're desperate and when your castle's about to come under siege, what do? The most you can do is just sit in there and hold out for maybe 10 days, maybe 20 days.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's just, you have to surrender eventually. So I mean, not go out in a big boom and risk it all?
Like most people would be like, let me try to live for as long as I can.
Yeah.
Like hide or do whatever, just live for as long as I can. But this guy went all in, man.
Again, ambitious. So, survival. Moving on. One of the, well, big clans, I mean, medium-sized clans, is now defeated. And Oda, like Oda Nobunaga now controls their territory. The Matsudaira, because again, the guy, the head of the Matsudaira clan, who was earlier allied with the Imigawa, is kind of, is actually pretty smart. His name, history remembers him as Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Okay.
He was basically the great unifier of Japan. The third great unifier of Japan, actually.
How many times has Japan been unified?
Oh, we'll get to that.
Okay.
So this guy was also known as Matsudaira Motoyasu.
Okay.
The interesting thing is, during this period, everyone changed their names basically every other day, like over 15 times.
So was this planned?
Yeah, I'm just going to refer to... Huh?
The change in name, was it like to serve some sort of a strategic purpose, or was it just like, I just like that name, so I'm going to switch it?
I mean, it could also be that, but in most cases, at least the documented ones, it was for strategic gain.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so now that Oda Nobunaga has successfully pushed back or defeated the Imigawa, the Matsudaira are like, oh yeah, this guy seems cool. He's winning. So I'm going to jump onto his train and ride it as long as I can.
And Oda allowed that?
Yeah. At this point in time, they're basically... So Oda Nobunaga and Tokugawa Ieyasu are basically Batman and Robin.
Ah, cool.
So what they do next is they head over west... to attack the clan named Saito.
Okay.
And so Tokugawa Ieyasu is basically like, okay, you go attack and head over to Kyoto. I'm going to hold on to the eastern flank. Because again, if you move out of your territory, people are obviously going to move in and attack it. Because, well, you're weak. So, again... No big brain. I mean, Oda Nobunaga, a brilliant general, he attacks Saito, which is to the west, and on his way to Kyoto, where the shogunate resides.
Okay.
And defeats Saito.
Wait, just like that?
Yeah. I mean, just like that.
Awesome.
Interesting. Now another guy comes up, and he is also really famous. This guy... called Toyotomi Hideyoshi, is renowned as the second great unifier of Japan. And I forgot to mention this, Oda Nobunaga was, well, the first great unifier of Japan.
Cool.
The interesting thing is Toyotomi Hideyoshi is a peasant right now, like a literal peasant. He isn't even a samurai. And he's basically the footwear bearer to Oda Nobunaga. And after his, well, efforts in defeating Saito, Hideyoshi is promoted to Lord. And, well, he's given the territories of Saito. And not giving too much thought to that, Oda Nobunaga with his forces now move on to Kyoto, which is, again, everyone's goal at this point in time.
Wait, so Kyoto is kind of like, at this point in time, the capital of Japan?
Yes.
If not officially, then...
It's where the emperor... No, it's where the emperor resides. It's where the shogunate resided until it was broken apart. Cool. Basically, if you had control over Kyoto, you had control over Japan.
Cool.
Now, the interesting thing is, Oda Nobunaga, at this point in time, was the first person in Japan to introduce guns into samurai warfare. And again, samurai armor, great against swords. Hmm. But, I mean, as you already know, or you can guess, not so great against guns.
Wait, so this was like a game changer?
Yes. And it was again, this guy was basically gambling. If, yeah, that's kind of the right word. He was basically just gambling at this point in time. I'm going to use whatever advantage I have to win.
Well, that's one way to go about it.
Yeah. So, they march over to Kyoto and they take over Kyoto pretty much easily.
Wait, so you're telling me these guys march into what's practically the King's Landing of Japan with new technology that's guns and just take over. Like, be like, we're here.
Yeah.
We're taking your land. Get the fuck out of here. Get killed.
Yeah, that's basically...
I'm starting to like this Oda guy.
No, but the thing is, Kyoto was very weak right now because, again, nobody was actually in Kyoto. Like, no daimyo was actually in Kyoto. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he took over pretty much easily because, I mean, he had guns and guns is good.
Wait, so it was like magic to the other people, right? Who, damn.
Not magic. I mean,
strange technology is often considered magic.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyways, again, he got to Kyoto, but there were still a lot of other clans left out there. He's already been named shogun at this point in time. Because, again, he has proclaimed his rule over Kyoto.
I mean, he named himself as the shogunate. Shogun.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, everyone was trying to do that. Now, he marches on to... he marches northeast onto the Asakura land. Because they were kind of pissed off at Oda. Because they were like, yeah, I want the emperor back. I want the emperor to get his power back. But again, another shogun comes in. So the Asakura are kind of pissed at this guy, Oda Nobunaga. And again, Oda is a hothead. So he's like, if you don't bow down to me, I'm going to come and kill you.
Man, this is some Game of Thrones bullshit.
Yeah, you could probably relate Oda to Cersei in a kind of weird way. So he marches into Asakura territory, but before that, there's actually another clan in his way called the Azai, and the Azai, he has a weird relationship with Azai because the ruler of the Azai was basically his brother-in-law, but his brother-in-law despised him. So he was like, I'm not going to let you through. And the Azai and the Asakura formed an alliance to try to kill this guy. And Oda Nobunaga was basically pushing into this territory all on his own army. He didn't have help from Toyotomi Hideyoshi, and he didn't have help from Tokugawa Ieyasu.
So it's just him and his men against the world. Or Japan.
Yeah. Yeah. So, not surprisingly, he gets beat. And he returns to Kyoto.
Wait,
and
even
this
with
is where
guns,
ninjas come in.
Wait, even with guns on his side?
Yeah. Because, I mean, he's outnumbered again. No, you can't really win a battle even though you have overwhelming guns or new technology if you're outnumbered by a huge margin. So, yeah, he had to retreat. The cool thing is, this is when ninjas come in. And ninjas, okay, this may sound weird because ninjas are perceived as deceptive masters of the dark martial arts or whatever. But ninjas were actually more loyal than samurais at this point in time.
I mean, by the looks of it and by this entire civil war thing, they sure do seem like it. I mean, I always thought of samurais to be so loyal because if you just consider seppuku, so this, like, as I mentioned before, it's like this ritual suicide that was very popular amongst the samurai warrior class. It basically involved stabbing oneself in the belly with a short sword, also known as a tanto. This was one of the many weapons samurais carried on their personnel. So and they slice open their stomach and then turn the blade upwards to ensure a fatal wound. So like they're definitely dead. And samurais used to do this.
Wait. So they slice sideways and then they turn the blade up and like do they continue or something?
I mean, while slitting open their stomach, they like kind of tilt it upwards.
Ah, okay.
To ensure like a fatal wound. To ensure that even if there's a medic on site, even if someone wants to help you, I don't think it would be possible. Plus like that, and in that point in time, I don't think the medicine was that advanced. But either way, that's like definitely a fatal wound. Sometimes practitioners of seppuku also made two cuts. One vertically, that's from the start of the chest towards their belly button. And then one horizontal. But
I mean, I wouldn't be able to make the horizontal cut after the vertical cut.
I mean, and the baffling thing is, it was made on two occasions. Well, actually three. One, when you were defeated on the battlefield, that's when samurais did it to die with honor. Because then they're like, fuck it, you can't take my life. I'm the one who's going to end it. I'm in control. So then they kill themselves. Second would be when their master died or they were dishonored. And third would be when the emperor or the shogun actually ordered them to. So then it was like a whole ass ceremony where hundreds of people were there. The samurai would kneel in the middle of everyone, like a proper ceremony with music. Last words would be like a dying poem and everything that the samurai had to prepare. And then they would like just do it like in front of hundreds of people just so like that they can die with their honor. Oh, yeah, this is a ritual suicide. A ritual suicide.
Okay.
It was really gruesome.
Wait. So, there's another type of samurai called a ronin. Who's basically a samurai who's lost his master. Right?
Translates to, ronin roughly translates to one who's lost his path. Or a wanderer.
Yeah. So, I mean, why would a person who's lost his master actually commit seppuku when he could just avenge them as a ronin or wanderer?
So, oftentimes, ronin samurais actually became ronin because they had, think of it as the entire spirit concept that when a person dies and he still has some unfinished business or needs to, get their revenge on someone. They come back as a ghost or a spirit. So think of a ronin as a samurai with unfinished business who's lost their master. So oftentimes samurais became ronins because they lost their master and they were so connected to their master that they extended their life, if I may, just to kill that one person or seek revenge. And then they would commit seppuku to make sure that their life was completely devoted to that one person, that one master.
But there's, okay. There actually is mention of a Ronin in this part of Japanese history. He didn't commit seppuku. That's the interesting thing.
Tell me more.
Again, moving forward with the story, this is where it gets juicy. So Oda is furious. Now, he was already furious on his brother-in-law because, well, he didn't support him or simply let him pass. But since the Asai were the ones who actually attempted to assassinate Nobunaga by, again, a ninja, this just made him, I don't know, double furious. And he was at the point, like, he was literally shouting into the air, like, I'm going to kill you, and taking his brother-in-law's name.
Okay.
So, he regroups, he asks Toyotomi Hideyoshi to help him in Kyoto, and he pushes into Asai territory again. This is where it gets bizarre. What do you think of Buddhism in general? Like, do you think they would have played any part of this bloodshed?
I mean, Buddhism, whenever I think of it, it seems like really peaceful. That people minding their own business and not fucking with others, I guess.
You're in for a treat then.
So God damn it.
So there's basically a group of... the group is called the Iko Iki.
That's one eccentric name.
And they're basically warrior Buddhist militant monks.
Mouthful, but okay.
Yeah, so they're militant Buddhists or warrior monks. Yeah, that's...
Warrior monks sounds better.
Which is just crazy, because they practice Buddhism. And they joined the Asai and the Asakura they turned against Nobunaga. So, yeah, that's basically it. And this pisses off Nobunaga so much that he locks the Iko Iki in one of their monasteries under an 11-year siege.
Fuck.
Which is the longest siege in Japanese history. And they somehow survived, and he just ordered his men to go kill everyone inside. But that wasn't the end of the Iko Iki, of course, because I mean they had different monasteries in different places, and one of the monasteries was right on a hill that was overlooking Kyoto. And the interesting thing is, Oda Nobunaga is pissed off so much that he lights the entire hill on fire.
Fuck.
He lights the entire hill on fire.
A hill on fire. So it's like one huge ass forest fire.
It's a huge forest fire. Everyone in Kyoto can see it because, I mean, it overlooks the city. The thing is, the monastery is on top, of course, and people would obviously flee, right? Or at least try to flee. Oda is so pissed off. He orders his men to cut down everyone who comes down. I mean everyone. Women and children included.
That's gruesome, man.
This was one of the most bloody, I mean, massacres in Japanese history. Which is, I mean, I don't even know what to say to this, because I don't think you're supposed to kill women and children, but come on.
Fuck, man. Like, too much bloodshed.
So, yeah, that's just, I don't even know what to say. But, now he basically defeats the Asai and the Asakura. And in Japan, there are about only two more major clans left. The Takeda and the Oesaku. The Oesaku don't really care about what's going on right now. The Takeda, however, they... So since Oda is in Kyoto, the Takeda attack this guy, Tokugawa Ieyasu, in his castle. And the thing is, he's inside with only 5 other people.
Okay.
Which is, you can't expect to hold a castle against, you know, an army of 40,000 when you're just 5 people.
So the castle is now like a kill box where you're in at your dad.
Yes. I mean, this is 5 people in there. There's not really much of a kill box. Tokugawa Ieyasu was basically the most ballsy move ever. He had a good ally. You must have heard of this ninja called Hattori Hanzo.
I've heard of him. The ninja.
The most famous ninja ever to have lived.
Yes.
And this... So Hattori Hanzo is basically commissioned. Okay, you take 20 of your men and attack. 40,000 people. And Takeda Shingen, who's leader of the Takeda clan, he's basically like, oh, okay. This was a ballsy move. They wouldn't have made this unless they actually had a lot of people in there. And yeah, the thing worked and yeah, he just went away. But Hattori Hanzo, I don't know what it is about this man, but somehow he killed Takeda Shingen. Somehow. I mean, fucking ninjas, I guess.
Wait, so he's like, I don't give a fuck about you or your man. I'm gonna fucking kill you.
Yeah.
A badass.
And with that, the Takeda clan basically loses all power because his son is basically an idiot. And with just one more clan left for in Oda's, well, bloodthirst or whatever to become shonen, the Osaku clan, the leader of the Osaku clan is basically called the god of war. he's called the personification of the god of war, which is just, I mean, wow. And he has super to go cool. against him. But this is just sad. He dies. The what? Leader of the Osaku clan just dies.
Wait, so the god of war dies?
Yeah, he just dies.
Anticlimactic.
I don't know. Like, I think it was because of old age or something, but he just dies.
Oh, come on.
The most anticlimactic thing ever. And with that, Oda Nobunaga is shogun of all Japan. Regent of all Japan. Now, as far as the betrayal part. So, there was this guy called Mitsuhide, who was a general in Oda's army since the start of his campaign. And he kind of despised Oda after what he did to the Iko Iki, where he killed everyone who came down. And he betrays his master. Which is, I mean, I don't know what to say to that. But I mean, this is how it goes down.
At this point...
So, again...
Are you sure you're not reading some Japanese Game of Thrones fanfic?
No. Okay, so, no, listen to me. This is awesome. Okay. So, this guy, Mitsuhide, when Tokugawa was under attack by Takeda, he obviously calls out for help. And Mitsuhide is like, I'll go there. You also come. So Nobunaga is like, I'll be there, but I'm going to take a minor detour to Kyoto because, again, he's shogun and he has to manage some business. And he, along with a small group of men, are staying in a temple where Mitsuhide redirects his forces and he's like, that is where the enemy is.
Fuck.
Pointing to his own master. And he and his men light. So what happens is, again, they're going in to kill him. Nobunaga, along with his oldest son, is inside the temple. And with his men, they basically light the temple on fire And okay. after that, they retreat to a room, all of them.
Hmm.
And they commit seppuku.
Fuck.
Because, I mean, that's the honorable way to go. And...
damn.
Do you remember Toyotomi Hideyoshi? That guy was basically besieged. He had besieged another castle right now. So he was just continuing Nobunaga's quest. Once he receives word of this, he immediately turns his forces around to intercept Mitsuhide, because Toyotomi Hideyoshi Nobunaga was his master. So again, Bushido code, right? And yeah, Mitsuhide is killed by Hideyoshi, who's furious at this betrayal. Mitsuhide is arrogant enough to call himself Shogun of Japan, but he's only Shogun of Japan officially for 3 days before, well, he's killed. And I mean, this story of betrayal is just mind-blowing.
It definitely is, man. It's like, it seems like fiction, being honest.
Yeah.
Like, so dramatic.
Okay, it's like, this period is basically the apex of what samurais were.
Mm-hmm.
At this point in time, the samurai class basically accounted for 1/10 of Japan's population.
I mean, samurais at this point in time were also like one of the highest social classes, weren't they?
Yes.
And one of the interesting things, and also something like, I mean, I love samurais. I fucking love them. But one thing that disgusts me about them was that, I forgot the actual term for it, something in Japanese, but if, let's say, I'm a samurai and you're in front of me and I just don't like the way you're looking at me, I say that, well, I think you're insulting me looking at me like that. I could just use my fucking katana and decapitate you. And when I'm taken to court, no one can like take me to court. I'd obviously just go up to the shogun and be like, I murdered this guy because I didn't like he insulted my honor. He insulted my honor. And here is my best friend in the fucking world as my witness. You ask him, he'll tell you the same thing. Your best friend says that, yeah, well, there was a UFO that came in, took the samurai to space. There they enjoyed a good-ass movie, came down, discovered new technology, and then, yeah, this guy looked at him weird, insulted his honor, so he slit him. And the shogun would just be like, yeah, man, I mean, that guy deserved to die. And they would just get away with it.
That seems so legit. Like, oh man, you killed this guy because you wanted to? Awesome. Can you kill another guy?
They would often do that. So, like, if let's say a samurai got a new-ass katana, and they just wanted to see if it like could actually kill people or some shit. So they would peasants and townspeople, they would just go on at night, like samurais would just attack them. And funny thing about katanas, so the higher in value a katana is, the more times on a body it has been tried. So when the blacksmith or whatever Japanese term they have for them finishes making the katana, he would use it on criminals. So like dead criminal bodies, he would use it on them to see if it actually works or not.
I mean, legitimate testing. I mean, props to you, man. But come on.
It's fucking that's creepy. Brutal. And I don't know, man. I thought samurais were better.
So I mean, that just says it about samurais. We started off with the noble samurais and things get shaky around the 15th century.
Yeah.
And it's just, and then after that, it's just 1.5 centuries of murder, betrayals and proper Game of Thrones-esque shit.
True.
And after that, things kind of die down for 2 centuries. Mm-hmm. So till the 18th century. Then the emperor comes back, but that's not the point. So this just outlines that a samurai, or what a samurai is called, as gone through drastic changes throughout history. And it just goes to show that, yeah, they were samurai, and we've made them sort of legends, but they were just people. So they were obviously, they had the same faults as us.
And it speaks volumes.
Albeit they might have made those faults less. But yeah.
It speaks volumes about how society hasn't changed that much. Like, we all start off as that pure-hearted person with that one dream to bring about change, but then power comes in, that intoxication, that lust, and then you just start becoming someone that you're not. See, samurais were, I idealized, well, kind of still do, they're badass, but still, I mean, I thought of them to be the world, to be like so fucking amazing and loyal. But turns out they're just like everyone else. They're just humans.
Yeah.
And one thing that like not a lot of people know, samurais weren't strictly masculine. So there were Japanese female warriors in the ruling class who were counterparts to samurai.
Mm.
So these women were called Ona Bugesha. So I don't know. I think I'm murdering that term. But still. And they would participate in combat along with their male counterparts. It's not like they would have, like, they would go into different battles or some shit. They would, like, be at war with them. And it's just mind-blowing. Because even at that time...
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, they were given a chance. So, plus, I feel that Japan, even at that time, was, like, very, how should I say, open-minded, I guess. Because it's not just the women samurai thing. So in Japan, obviously, in today's day and age, it kind of exceeds some ethical lines. But students would often have relations, maybe sexual, may not be sexual, with their sensei. And it was actually, I don't know, is sensei a Chinese term? Or is it Japanese?
No, it's Japanese. Yes,
I don't know. I'm sorry for that. If sensei is Chinese, then I'm so fucking sorry. But yeah,
sensei is Japanese.
Sensei is Japanese. Okay, never mind. But like, with their teacher, and it was actually promoted. It wasn't like something, you know, you would hide or like be in the shadows for. But it was something that was like promoted to have good relations. By good, I mean like with benefits kind of shit with your teacher. And male same sex was also not frowned upon. At that time, same-sex relations. So that's like something good to take away from that age.
Yeah.
But yeah, the rest is all betrayal.
All Japanese society, pretty advanced. But samurai, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Badass as they were, did have their faults.
True.
And yeah.
I mean, but samurais.
Well, I certainly enjoyed talking about this a lot.
Likewise, man. But like samurais... Also, the entire samurai scene also came to a decline. In the late 19th century, as Japan opened its borders to the US Navy, and the power was given back to the imperial family in the Meiji Restoration in 1868. And then, samurais, obviously you can't just like be like, okay, samurais, your work is done, go fuck off. You can't just be like that. So samurais then became known as Shizoku. A term which represented their former samurai status, and they were no longer allowed to wear a katana in public. So like all these awesome ass weapons, they weren't allowed to, you know, just wear them again in public, of course. So, and in the late 19th century, the samurai class was abolished in favor of a Western style national army. And as a result, many of the samurai became highly motivated and disciplined imperial army officers, or use their high level of literacy. Again, samurais weren't just good with like a sword. They were also good with a pen. They were highly educated. And they went on to become reporters, writers, or like just serve in the government. So that's like kind of cool. So in a way, samurais still live today. But then in another, they're really, really dead.
Well, I think that does it for today.
Kind of does. Today was like, this was longer than we intended to talk about them. But again, samurais are just fucking awesome.
And very interesting.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Nighttime High podcast. We really enjoyed talking about samurais and, well, a bit of Japanese legend. Tune in every Tuesday for more eccentric and mind-bending content. Reach out to us on Instagram at Nighttime High Podcast and tell us what you liked in today's episode. See you next week.